Today is Friday, the 17th of April, and this is the World Socialist Website. Iran War Brings Massive Price and Profit Gouging, by Nick Beams. As workers around the world are hit with the ever-worsening consequences of the US war on Iran, crippling rises in petrol and gas prices, food price hikes, and the growing threat of food shortages in poorer countries, major corporations and banks are raking in increased profits to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. First in line to benefit from the profit bonanza, as could be expected, are the oil companies. But the flow of increased money extends across the board. According to an investigation by The Guardian, the results of which were published on Wednesday, with oil at around $100 per barrel, the major oil conglomerates in Saudi Arabia, Russia, the United States, Britain, and Europe will collect an additional $234 billion in profit for 2026, an extra inflow of $30 million an hour for the rest of the year. The biggest winner is Saudi Arabia's Aramco, which is expected to make a war profit of $25.5 billion, with the Russian petrogiants set to make an additional $23.9 billion. The US firm ExxonMobil will take in an additional $11 billion. Shell's revenue will rise by $6.8 billion, and Chevron stands to make an additional $9.2 billion. The additional profits are on top of the $1 trillion which the oil industry takes in every year, while receiving explicit subsidies which totaled $1.3 trillion in 2022, according to calculations by the International Monetary Fund. There are other benefits as well flowing from the rise in share prices. The market value of ExxonMobil has increased by $118 billion, while that of Shell is up $34 billion. Apart from the oil producers, trading firms which deal in oil, food, metals, and other necessary commodities, largely dominating global markets, are already cashing in. The Wall Street Journal reported that the Swiss commodities trader, Gunvor, said it had already made as much money in the first quarter of this year as it did in all of 2025, when it made a profit of $1.6 billion. Others will be experiencing a similar boost. Also not surprisingly, US arms manufacturers have been cashing in. On the first day of the US attack on Iran, major firms recorded a rise in their total market value of up to $30 billion. The profit and price gouging extends across the US economy under conditions where, according to a recent article in the New York Times, corporate profits, quote, have reached a record share of the US economy, end quote. Corporate America intends to keep it that way. Sonu Varghese, the global macro strategist at the Carson Group, a financial firm, told The Times that many companies viewed inflation from outside shocks such as war, quote, as an opportunity to raise prices and boost margins, end quote, and that there was going to be some margin expansion. This points to a repeat of the experience of the inflation surge of 2022, when, as The Times reported, data from the US Producer Price Index, quote, showed that wholesalers and retailers generally expanded the margin between their sales prices and their cost of acquiring goods, end quote. Major US banks have also been cashing in on the opportunities generated by the war. The six major US banks reported collective profits of $47.6 billion for the first quarter, much of it generated because market volatility provided conditions for significantly profitable trading. Reporting on the profit hike, the Financial Times noted that the first quarter was marked by geopolitical shocks, the military operation in Venezuela, and the Iran war, triggering volatility, which is, quote, good for investment banks which make money from financing and facilitating client trades, end quote. JP Morgan led the way in absolute terms with a 13% increase in profits over the same period last year to $16.5 billion, with market jitters being characterized as a, quote, gift to trading desks, end quote. Goldman Sachs reported a 19% increase in profits to $5.6 billion. Citigroup reported a 42% profit surge, and Morgan Stanley's profits rose 29%. The combined increase in the profits from the trading desks of the major banks is estimated to be the highest in 12 years. Much of this money is being used to finance share buybacks, to boost the portfolios of the bank's senior executives and big investors. The largest US banks spent a record $33 billion on buybacks in the first quarter, with JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs and Citigroup making their largest ever repurchases. The banks have benefited from the relaxation of regulations under Trump. Bank of America Chief Financial Officer Alastair Borthwick said the bank was, quote, encouraged by the work the administration is doing, end quote, as it bought back $7.2 billion of its own stock in the quarter, the highest level in 4 years. The Trump regime is moving to reduce the amount of capital the banks must hold as a reserve, freeing up money for trading and buybacks. The overall sentiment on Wall Street is that the profit bonanza will continue, at least for now, with the S&P 500 passing the 7,000 mark for the first time on Wednesday. Inflation profiteering fueled by the war is one factor. Another is a wave of mass layoffs, hitting tens of thousands of workers in many cases, especially in the high-tech industries. Commenting on what it called a new era of mega layoffs, The Wall Street Journal noted that, quote, employers are seizing on the potential financial upsides of severing swathes of their workforces at once, end quote. In the past, mass layoffs by a company may have signalled troubles or mismanagement. Quote, now such a company is more likely to get a big stock bump and praise from investors for acting boldly, end quote. Giant corporations and banks are feeding on death, destruction, and the impoverishment of the working class the world over. This makes it urgently necessary for workers and youth to draw the sharpest political conclusions. The war on Iran itself is not the product of the individual Donald Trump, but is driven by the historic crisis of imperialism, of which he is just the most grotesque personification. Likewise, the obscenity expressed in the present-day economic and financial system is not the product of the individual greed of the ruling oligarchs, though that exists in abundance. It is a product of the capitalist system itself, the objective logic of which, as Marx explained 150 years ago, is the creation of fabulous wealth at one pole of society and poverty, misery and degradation at the other. Today, the necessity for its overthrow and the establishment of socialism is not confined to the pages of Das Kapital, but is being written large in the language of daily life. US blockade of Strait of Hormuz deepens conflicts between major powers, by Jordan Shilton. Washington's blockade of the Strait of Hormuz has been in force since Monday in what marks a major escalation of the war against Iran. The attempt by US forces to halt all tanker traffic to and from Iranian ports aims to compel Tehran to accept sweeping concessions to American imperialism while also cutting across the interests of China, which relies on cheap oil from Iran and the broader Gulf region for much of its energy imports. US Vice President J.D. Vance made clear Tuesday that the US war of aggression is aimed at restructuring the Middle East. He declared at an event that President Donald Trump was not interested in small deals, but was seeking a quote-unquote grand bargain with Iran, which would see the US treat Iran, quote, economically like a normal country, end quote. Trump and Vance want to roll back the clock to before 1979, when the Iranian Revolution ended US imperialism's financial and military dominance over the country of 93 million people. Trump's statements since the beginning of the war demonstrate that American imperialism will resort to the most ruthless barbarism in order to secure its preeminence over the world's most important energy exporting region. He vowed to bomb Iran back to the Stone Ages and made the genocidal threat on 7 April that an entire civilization could be wiped out. The US-Israeli bombardment of Iran was conducted with indiscriminate bloody-mindedness, as shown by the destruction of a girls' school on the first day of the war, killing over 160 children. Independent investigations and on-the-ground reports following last week's ceasefire revealed that even when the US claimed to be hitting military targets, the collateral damage to surrounding civilian infrastructure and residential buildings was extensive. In an interview this week with Fox Business, the war criminal Trump menaced Iran with further war crimes if it refuses to bow to American imperialist dictates. Speaking like a mafia don, Trump said, quote, "If I pulled up stakes right now, it would take them 20 years to rebuild that country, and we're not finished. We could take out every one of their bridges in 1 hour, every one of their power plants," end quote. Trump speaks for American imperialism, which has never forgiven the Iranian people for the 1979 revolution that toppled the US-funded Shah's repressive dictatorship. His concern is not with Iranian terrorism, let alone the democratic rights of the Iranian people. Rather, as David North put it when summing up the historical relationship between US imperialism and Iran in a recent lecture given at Berlin's Humboldt University, it all boils down to, quote, "oil, geopolitical influence, and the class interests of American capitalism," end quote. At a briefing on the war Thursday, Fascist Secretary of War Pete Hegseth warned that the US military is, quote, "reloading," and the Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dan Kane, declared that the military could resume combat, quote, "at literally a moment's notice," end quote. Kane added that 13 ships have turned around since the blockade of Iranian ports began. Later in the day, this figure was increased to 14. Home to the world's fourth largest oil reserves and second largest natural gas reserves, Iran exported between 80 and 90% of its oil to China. Beijing has benefited from cut-price Iranian oil over recent years due to the brutal sanctions imposed on the country by Trump during his first term in office, when he unilaterally abrogated the UN-backed nuclear accord with Tehran in 2018. In 2021, China signed a 25-year strategic partnership with Iran that included major investments in Iranian infrastructure in exchange for $400 billion worth of oil for the Chinese economy. Washington now hopes that what its sanctions could not accomplish can be achieved through brute military force. But the first 6 weeks of this war have demonstrated that even the world's most powerful military cannot overcome the impact of American imperialism's protracted decay. Prior to the war, China was receiving some 1.4 million barrels of oil per day from Iran and over 5 million barrels per day from the Gulf region as a whole. Although the US blockade does not directly hinder exports from other Gulf states to China, the region's output has been hit sharply by the war, threatening global economic disruption. China reportedly has oil reserves able to cover 5 months of demand, but long-term reductions in supply could seriously weaken its already fragile economy. Moreover, the prospect of a global economic recession, raised this week in a report by the IMF, would mean a decreasing market for Chinese exports, which the Stalinist regime in Beijing relies upon to maintain economic growth. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov stated during a visit to Beijing Wednesday that Moscow could offset any oil shortfalls for China resulting from the war in the Middle East. However, this assertion is more than dubious. Pipelines between Russia and China are reportedly already operating at full capacity, and Russia lacks the tankers needed to substantially increase its approximately 2 million barrels of oil per day reaching China. Russia would have to more than double its present exports to China to offset entirely Iranian oil exports and partially cover the decline from other Gulf nations. Faced with the aggressiveness and criminality of American imperialism, unparalleled since the Nazi regime during World War II, Beijing has responded to the US blockade by holding out the prospect of a stable, multipolar world in which the interests of all states are respected. According to a Xinhua report, Xi told Lavrov that Beijing and Moscow should, quote, strengthen multilateral cooperation, firmly uphold and practice multilateralism, join hands to revive the authority and vitality of the UN, engage in closer coordination and cooperation within the framework of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and BRICS countries, and promote the development of the international order in a more just and reasonable direction, end quote. This modern-day version of the Soviet Stalinist bureaucracy's policy of peaceful coexistence has even less of a basis in the realities of world capitalism today than it did during the 20th century, when it led to the Stalinists' liquidation of the Soviet Union in a failed bid to integrate Russian capitalism into the imperialist world order. Under the would-be dictator Trump, American imperialism is fully committed to waging a Third World War to defend its global hegemonic position amid its escalating economic decline. Trump's blood-curdling threats to wipe out Iranian civilization testify that American imperialism is not simply going to peacefully accept an expansion of Chinese and Russian influence under the banner of multilateralism at its expense. Trump's actions since the beginning of the year have made unmistakably clear that his ultimate goal is blocking China's rise. He launched a military raid on Venezuela, a major supplier of oil to China, in order to capture its president and install a US puppet regime to open the country's energy reserves to US capital. US imperialism miscalculated disastrously with its belief that an operation could be pulled off with similar ease against Iran, but it is nonetheless continuing to pursue the goal of sabotaging Chinese economic relations throughout the entire Middle East. Whether this takes the form of a continuation of the war or a grand bargain with Iran, the objective logic of this conflict, which is irresolvable under capitalism, is a catastrophic military conflagration between nuclear-armed powers. As David North observed in his Berlin lecture, quote, the historical parallel that imposes itself is not the Gulf War of 1991 or the invasion of Iraq in 2003, but August 1914. The First World War began as a regional conflict in the Balkans and expanded through the logic of alliances, imperialist rivalries and miscalculation into a global catastrophe that destroyed four empires and killed 20 million people. End quote. The only way out is through the building of an international anti-war movement led by the working class to put an end to the capitalist profit system and establish socialism. Workers in Iran and throughout the Middle East must unify their struggles against imperialist aggression with the working class in the imperialist centres of North America and Europe, who confront a vicious assault on their living standards to pay for endless wars and enrichment of the financial oligarchy, and with workers in China and Russia, whose interests collide with the efforts of these two capitalist restorationist regimes' attempts to accommodate themselves within crisis-ridden capitalism. This is a program fought for by the International Committee of the Fourth International and the World Socialist website. Pentagon drafts plans for military assault on Cuba by Andrea Lobo. The Pentagon is planning a military operation in Cuba to topple the Castroite government in Havana, according to a USA Today report published Wednesday. Sources familiar with discussion told the newspaper that the White House has issued a direct order to ramp up preparations for action against the island, marking a dangerous escalation in Washington's long-standing campaign to reassert colonial domination across the hemisphere. These preparations follow a series of increasingly explicit threats by Donald Trump. Standing next to a woman wearing a DoorDash grandma t-shirt at the White House on April 13, Trump spoke in the language of a gangster, talking about a drive-by shooting, declaring that the United States may stop by Cuba after concluding its war of aggression against Iran. 2 weeks earlier, he similarly said that, quote, Cuba is going to be next for military intervention. Such statements are not idle rhetoric. They are the public expression of advanced war planning that is already underway. The same administration that is posturing as alternately escalating and de-escalating its war against Iran is, in reality, using negotiations as a tactical cover. In the case of Iran, diplomatic manoeuvres buy time to mobilise the necessary resources for the next phase of US operations, securing control of the Strait of Hormuz and Iran's vast oil and gas reserves by whatever means necessary, including the open threat of annihilating Iranian society. A similar strategy appears to be unfolding in relation to Cuba. Limited contacts with the Castro family, alongside carefully calibrated concessions, such as the decision to allow a single ship carrying Russian oil to dock with at most a 2-week supply, could suddenly give way to a devastating military intervention against a country of roughly 8 million people whose economy and armed forces are already in shambles. The humanitarian situation inside Cuba is catastrophic. Decades of the genocidal US economic blockade, intensified through an oil embargo since January, have resulted in daily blackouts lasting for hours, alongside severe shortages of drinking water, food, and medical supplies. The economy is effectively ground to a halt, with workers frequently unable to report to their jobs due to lack of transportation, electricity, or basic necessities. Internationally, tensions are mounting. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov stated during a visit to China that Moscow would continue providing assistance to Cuba and expressed hope that the United States would not return to the era of colonial wars. A Russian tanker, the Universal, is currently sailing in the North Atlantic and is expected to reach Cuba within approximately 15 days. Analysts have identified it as the likely next fuel shipment to the island. Washington, for its part, has indicated that such shipments will be permitted only on a case-by-case basis, another lever of pressure in its escalating campaign. The United States is already deeply engaged in colonial wars. The Pentagon has deployed an additional 10,000 troops to the Middle East and has redeployed the aircraft carrier USS George H.W. Bush and its strike group from the Caribbean to that theatre. This redeployment follows the completion of operations in Venezuela, where Washington orchestrated the capture of President Nicolas Maduro and the installation of a puppet regime, now handing over control of the country's vast oil reserves, the largest in the world, as well as key mineral resources to US corporations. The planned regime change operation in Cuba must be understood as part of this broader geopolitical offensive. Like the interventions in Venezuela and Iran, it is aimed at securing strategic resources and commercial pathways while countering the growing influence of China in energy and infrastructure. These objectives are reinforced by a pattern of escalating violence across the region, including near-daily boat strikes in the Eastern Pacific and Caribbean. These operations, carried out under the pretext of combating narco-trafficking, have killed at least 178 fishermen since September, without any evidence being presented to justify their being targeted. Cuba occupies a position of immense strategic importance for US imperialism. Its proximity to Florida, its control over key Caribbean shipping lanes, and its potential use as a military base all contribute to its significance. Washington has repeatedly invoked allegations that China and Russia maintain signals intelligence facilities on the island to justify its aggressive posture. Executive Order 14380, issued in January 2026, declared a national emergency over Cuba and threatened punitive tariffs against any country supplying it with oil. This move effectively forced Mexico, Cuba's primary supplier after the US intervention cut off Venezuelan exports, to halt shipments. The current offensive is codified in what has been termed the Trump corollary to the Monroe Doctrine, outlined in the 2025 National Security Strategy. This doctrine reasserts US dominance over the Western Hemisphere by denying rival powers access to, quote, strategically vital assets, end quote, including ports, military bases, and natural resources. Framed in openly expansionist terms, akin to Hitler's Greater Germany, the administration has advanced the concept of a Great North America, stretching from Greenland to the equator through a program of recolonization. The objective is not merely geopolitical control, but the dismantling of all social gains associated with the working class and national liberation struggles of the 20th century, including the 1959 Cuban Revolution that led to vast nationalizations and basic social and labor rights. A report published Monday by the Wall Street Journal details backroom talks between US officials and relatives of Raul Castro, brother of the late Fidel Castro and president until 2018. His son, Alejandro Castro Espín, and grandson, Raul Rodriguez Castro, have participated in discussions with American representatives. Rodriguez Castro, known as the Crab, has been filmed enjoying a lavish lifestyle, including yacht parties and nightclub appearances in Miami. He is now reportedly a regular presence in elite diplomatic and business circles in Europe. Alejandro Castro Espín, a general in the Interior Ministry, played a central role in negotiating the restoration of diplomatic relations with the United States under the Obama administration in 2015. He has continued to seek contact with US officials who have described him as non-ideological and pragmatic. Another figure, Raul Castro's grand-nephew, Oscar Perez Oliva, has rapidly risen through the political ranks and is widely viewed as a potential successor to President Miguel Díaz-Canel. Now serving as Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Foreign Trade and Investment, Perez Oliva has openly courted foreign capital, declaring in a US television interview that, quote, Cuba is open for business, end quote. These figures are closely linked to GAISA, a vast military-controlled conglomerate that dominates the most profitable sectors of the Cuban economy, including tourism, foreign exchange, and fuel distribution. Observers estimate that GAISA controls more than 40% of the national economy. Alongside them stands a younger generation, exemplified by Fidel Castro's grandson, Sandro Castro, a social media influencer who flaunts luxury cars and has openly declared that Cubans want capitalism. The political significance of the social character of the Castro family and the Cuban state is clear. It does not represent, even in a distorted or bureaucratic form, the Cuban working class. It constitutes a privileged ruling elite, integrated into global capitalist networks and concerned above all with preserving its wealth and privilege under whatever political arrangement emerges. Its readiness to negotiate with US imperialism underscores its fundamentally counter-revolutionary character. Already, the Cuban regime has implemented sweeping measures to open the economy to foreign investment and has actively courted wealthy Cuban exiles in Miami, the very social layers that have historically supported terrorist attacks and coup attempts against the island. In this context, The continued role of the pseudo-left organizations to mischaracterize the regime and thus US imperialism's actions is particularly pernicious. The Morenoite left voice, affiliated with the so-called permanent revolution current, claims that the Cuban government continues to be a bureaucratic workers' state that retains a socialist character and merely needs to be pressured by the working class to adopt more democratic policies. It warns of capitalist restoration in the absence of greater mass participation, thereby promoting the illusion that the existing regime can be reformed in a progressive direction. Within the United States, Left Voice calls for opposition to Washington's policies through appeals to union bureaucrats and activist networks dominated by the Democratic Party. These proposals are designed not to mobilize the working class independently, but to subordinate it to the very institutions of the capitalist state responsible for imperialist aggression. This mirrors a role played by revisionist tendencies in the 1960s, which hailed Fidel Castro's movement as a model for socialist revolution and denounced the International Committee of the Fourth International, ICFI, as ultra-left and sectarian for rejecting this characterization. The Socialist Workers' Party, led by Joseph Hanson, promoted the Cuban Revolution as the acid test for Trotskyism, arguing that a petty bourgeois guerrilla movement had established a workers' state. In opposition, the Socialist Labour League, the British section of the ICFI, defended the fundamental principles of Marxism. It insisted that conscious revolutionary leadership by the working class is indispensable, that Cuba represented a negative confirmation of the theory of permanent revolution, and that Hanson's empiricism amounted to an adaptation to bourgeois and non-proletarian forces. Today, as the United States prepares for a new colonial war against Cuba, these lessons assume urgent relevance. It is not long before Trump speaks of turning Cuba into the 52nd state, having already proposed the annexation of Venezuela as the 51st. The implications of this war must be grasped in their full historical and political significance. For Lenin, the central question in World War I was not simply the denunciation of imperialist policies, but the transformation of imperialist war into a revolutionary struggle by the working class against its own ruling class. This required a relentless struggle against opportunism and chauvinism within the labour movement. Today, no tendency other than the ICFI raises the necessity of building an independent revolutionary leadership capable of uniting the struggles of workers across the hemisphere. The crisis of Cuba underscores the necessity of a conscious struggle for socialism as the only means of halting the descent into an imperialist world war and dictatorship. For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Jenny Campbell.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.